Hey, everybody. My name is Frank Wassenberg. Welcome to episode 6 of season 2 of the CX Experience video series. Kevin?
Hi, I'm Kevin. I'm the co-host of season 2 of the CX Experience.
Really excited today. We have a guest coming on the show today who took me about a year of nagging to get her on the call here. Donna Barato, the Vice President of Customer Service Centers for Wajax up in Toronto, a great client of ours and a great person. Thanks, Donna. Thanks for coming on and thanks for finally submitting.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited for today.
That's all we need.
Possibly.
Donna has the honor of being our first client whose migration we oversaw, having met her at the first CCW show that we went to, the first trade show we went to. So we're very lucky that we met Donna, because we cleared that first show, man. We didn't know what we were doing.
You also are the first client who has the honor of having both Kevin and I detained at the border.
Yes.
For 7 hours while we came to see you the first time. Do we have to tell you that? You remember that?
I remember that. It wasn't because you were bringing the those, what were they, the red fish or
Swedish fish?
No, the Swedish fish.
Actually,
you can't bring those to Canada.
So, two things, real quick. One, when we left that show, we did the whole Swedish fish thing, and everyone was stopping at the booth and getting Swedish fish and hanging out with us. Us being the worst marketing people we thought in the world, would be a good idea was to bag Swedish fish and mail them to people. So now we put them in the individually wrapped Swedish fish and sent them out to people. We're like, hey, here's one more. Let's have a conversation. And thought we'd get a laugh out of it. People were getting, for weeks, people were getting envelopes filled with melted plastic.
In July. Because the show was in June. We were mailing them in July out of New York.
People were like, thanks a lot for this bag of goop. What do you want me to do with this? The reason we got detained, though, we went up to your, we went up to meet you, and I go through customs, and Kevin says, we're here to meet with a prospect. We're trying to sell somebody something. And I go, here to see a client. And the woman was like, are you two together? And we're like, yeah. She's like, well, you said a different thing. So you're under, over there.
Yeah. We were going, we were 1-2 in line in immigration. And they asked me what was my purpose visiting Toronto, Canada, because Donna is based in Toronto. And I said, we're here for client meeting. She said, okay, fine, great, let me go. And then Frank goes, why are you coming here? And he said, we're here to visit a friend. And she's like, we're both dressed in suits. And she's like, are you with that guy? He's like, yeah. She's like, you too. Detention.
We went on a 6-hour line. I'm not kidding you. Where
it was the worst.
They wanted to go to our website. They were asking us questions about our technology, what we do, what's the cloud. I'm trying to explain to a TSA agent what the cloud is at 11 o'clock at night. If I've missed my dinner, I'm a crouchy boy at that point.
Yeah, it was bad. That's the worst immigration experience I've ever had in all my travels around the world. It was in Canada, the nicest country on the globe.
Well, I think for your clients and potential clients, we now know you get a different answer from one versus the other. So we'll just ask Kevin and we'll ask Frank and take the one we like better now.
See, this is why we don't have Donna on that frequently, because of that, the way she cuts
never,
right to the chase.
Yeah, never declare you're visiting Canada on business. Just say you're there for a bachelor party. Then won't blink an eye. Won't blink an eye. You're in business. 6 hours of interrogation.
So Donna, when we first met you, we thought you had one of the more unique challenges to kind of dive into the contact center. For you to go to cloud involved a massive forklift, and it was one of the reasons why we were so attracted to the project. Can you just mind filling us in a little bit on, because I think it'll benefit a lot of people to understand what your challenges were and how monumental the task was for you to get to contact center with all the disparate systems you were working on. You know, what were the challenges you faced up front?
Yeah, we had a number of challenges because we weren't, we are a typical contact center. So we're an organization that sells heavy equipment and provides a large breadth of products and services to our Canadian customers. And what we were putting in was a support group, high technical support group, that can support our branches and customers and provide superior experience for them. To do that, we needed to use contact center software and tools and procedures in order to route calls, service customers, manage the whole interaction or logging of all the information. So we're starting from scratch, very traditional organization, very bricks and mortar. We have our branches, we provide localized support. Our customers prefer to deal with a guy that's local to them. The challenge was, I guess, on a few fronts. One is fundamentally changing how we operate and how we service customers and bringing our customers along. Many customers who want to hear the phone ring don't want to hear a sophisticated IVR that says, welcome to Wajax, Canada's leading, blah, blah, blah. They want to hear the phone ring. They want to talk to the guy they normally talk to. So it's bringing them along the journey and bringing our branches along the journey with the fear of us trying to take over their business and trying to step in and put a wedge between them and the customer, where ultimately we were there to support them. So as we worked through that, we really needed to design a solution and have partners that continue to provide that localized relationship and that personal touch and bring the organization and the customers along with us.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge because I think two fronts that you touched on there. One, you've got a guy who's bought a tractor, right, or a deforest piece of forestry equipment. He's out there in the middle of the Canadian wilderness, and it's broken down. Now he's got to call somebody. He doesn't want to be on hold. He doesn't want to hear an IVR.
Right.
You know, he got a tree stuck 20 feet in the air, and he's got to get it down. He's got to get it chopped up.
Right.
And now you've got a cultural thing internally where you've got fear, uncertainty, and doubt with your end users that you're going to be superseding them now and potentially, one, knocking off their ability to service, but also, two, potentially replacing them is the fear that they have, as opposed to what I think you said at the end is, no, we're here to support you better.
Exactly. Our customers need the service when they're calling in. When they're broken down, they don't want to wait. So they want to know that they're getting somebody that can help them and that can provide the service they need, order that part, get them scheduled in, get that technician out to wherever they are. It could be in the field or get the machine brought into our shop for servicing. And you've got it right, Frank. It is and continues as we work through the change journey through this. It's making sure we keep that localized relationships and building the credibility. We've had to make sure that folks we hired in our support centers have credibility with our branch, that they are known for their level of technical expertise, customer service, and that they are the group that the branch is going to look at and say, yes, they can support my customer just as well as I can.
Yeah, I remember going back to 2018, because this is when we were all architecting this solution. When we first met you, had a very unique situation, because it's quite common to centralize a call center. It's quite common to say, hey, we're a large organization, as Wajax is. It's one of the largest provider of industrial equipment in Canada. But everything is in the branches. And you didn't want to disrupt that. The branches have a great business model dealing with their local customers. Local customers want to stick with the guys they know in your local branches. They want to call and get those guys. They don't want to speak to a call center agent per se. They don't want to speak to an AI. They want to speak to Jimmy, the guy that they know.
Yeah.
But, and I remember you explaining this to us, you had no way of tracking any of those metrics. You had no way of seeing those calls, who, when they were calling, why they were calling, how those calls could be serviced better. So in one sense, I remember you wanted to disrupt how you did things organizationally on a big scale, but to the end user, you wanted to keep it almost the way that it was, so they wouldn't notice that there was that much of a change. And that is very unique in the call center business right now. And, you know, I guess one the big question, the million-dollar question, is how is that working? How, you know, was that successful, and were you happy with it?
Yes, it's working. Our centers are still a lot. We continue to actually grow them and expand across the country. But we had our bumps in the road as we went. Because, as you said, Kevin, it's how do you disrupt internally without disrupting what the customer sees or feels? And there was a few times we did a bit of a misstep. And we rethink or rethought through things like, at the beginning, we removed the ring, that ringing sound when somebody called in to the contact center and to the branch, and moved right to that IVR welcome to Wajax. And that little change caused a huge disruption to our customers, and, sure. and our customers weren't happy. So we had to really adapt as we went and listen to the customers and took a step back. Brought them back to a world where, you know, they're hearing what they used to hear, but behind the scenes, we're doing all of the disruption and making the changes and routing the calls in a more sophisticated way that the customer isn't seeing or isn't being impacted. Again, we're constantly reviewing that, listening to the customers, getting the feedback. And in fact, as we speak, we're rolling out our call flow version 3.3, which is just enhancing that further and just making a few more changes to bring it back to an experience that they're used to. When we started this journey, our phone, you talked about not having visibility to calls and types of calls and where they're coming from. We didn't have phone systems that we could forward calls between branches or leave voice messages. So on top of putting in the contact centers or support centers, we were upgrading the base hardware phone system within our branches. So customers weren't used to even having the option to leave a voice message,
sure.
let alone or transfer a call between folks. They'd have to hang up and call back. So we've definitely come a long way. We definitely have a roadmap that is going to take us to a more sophisticated place. And we do plan on bringing our customers along with us. So we've been focused really on the basic email and phone channels, but we will start to look at chat and providing a little more of that modern technology, which is not so modern anymore.
I want to hear the first guy stuck out in the woods and you put him into a chat engine. Let me be on that one.
We just want them to SMS, and as long as they think that it's Joe that they've dealt with in the branch, it's all that matters.
Depends. Yeah, it depends. If the chat responds like it is Joe, I don't know.
Well, I think somebody like Joe will be on the other line, not a bot.
Yeah. With your type of sale, oh my God, I got a $2 million ball bearing that has to be replaced. The guy's talking to Joe the bot.
Yeah. Well, and that's also assuming he has service out in the bush.
Yeah.
A lot of our guys don't have the cell service when they're out there.
Oh, sure.
Data is really hard. Phone is hit and miss sometimes. They're on satellite phones calling in a lot of the times.
Oh, sure. That's what Elon Musk is doing. You know, God bless that guy. You know, he's going to solve all the world's problems with the. There's something, some stat, by the way, he owns now like a quarter of the world's satellites now. It was some crazy stat because he's been launching them. He's been launching so many now. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out for your kind of clients.
I'm even excited on a personal level because I'm a boater and I love going out into Georgian Bay and some of our lakes, and you don't get cell service, or let alone internet service. So
is that the purpose of it? You want the internet?
Pardon me?
You want the internet when you're out there on the boat?
But I can't wait till I can.
It's one of those things. You can always turn your phone off. he's quietly been working on global internet connectivity.
Through
all these satellites, and having just listened to him on the last Rogan podcast, they're making big strides in it. He wants to be able to deliver gig speed to anywhere in the planet, which, you know, would be life changing for a lot of people. But getting back to Wajax,
He should just build the Iron Man armor and call it a day, because I'd be happy with that. Just go as one time as Halloween and just make everybody happy.
So the metadata that, you know, you were hoping to garnish from having all this under a cloud-based umbrella, that was the goal when we started out on this project. Have you been able to utilize that data as far as who's calling in and how and when and about what, you know, all those, having access and visibility to customer information you never had before?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the contact center software provide way more information than you ever need. So we were like kids in a candy shop for the first time, thinking, wow, I can see every little trace of a call and who's coming in and what's going on. As we went along, you know, at first we're a little too ambitious on what are the dispositions and what are the campaigns and skill groups and how do you set it up, but we really had to go back and say, but what do we really want to measure? I think we've got it nailed down pretty well now to really know the reason the customer's calling in for. Did we hit one of our key metrics? Is did we hit, or did that customer get answered by somebody with the right skill group? So are they mm-hmm. trained in that category that customer's calling for? So we get a lot of insights from the information and the metadata that we can get from the system. We use it to help manage our flow, provide insights into how we can improve that experience or improve the model to make it better for our customers. We also, for anybody kind of new in this world or just putting in the systems for the first time or making changes, we use it for insights that there's a potential issue with the call flow in the system setup, because you can see we can look at the data and realize, well, why is this person getting this call, or why did it go to one group versus another, just based on knowing how we set up the call to the data showing me something contrary to how it's been designed. So data is a wonderful thing. Data can be a scary thing because you really need to know how to manage through it and gain those right insights from it. And it's definitely helping us continue to design and drive improvements as we go.
You can almost flood people. You know, one of the clients we work with, you know, it was interesting. It was like, we were asking, let me get the quote right. It was like, and it sounds like you, because it sounds like you were in the same boat. It's like, we were asking for so many metrics, but we didn't even know the right questions to ask up front. It's like we had 7,000 pieces of information and to tell us what it was, but we didn't know what questions to go through. It sounds like you were almost in the same boat, but, you know, maybe a little bit less.
Well, and that's it. And you really, you don't know what you don't know up front. So you get excited with it, but you really need to know what is it you're trying to solve and what's the question? And then, so based on that, what is the answer? So it's taken us a few iterations. And this is kind of, I'll say, a common theme of it's not perfect day one, and it's a journey, and you have to take a look, refine as we go, but getting to the right metrics that mean something, using the data to drive, not just report out some common metrics, but what are you using with them? What are the indicators? Are they a leading indicator or a lagging indicator to something going on? And how do you leverage that to drive improvements in your business?
Going back to 2019, 2018, and then into 2019, what was the biggest challenge in picking the provider you eventually went with? That was...
You know, we had no idea what we were looking for.
Sure.
This was new to our industry, new to us, not something that I had a whole lot of experience in. Spent a lot of time at CCW with yourselves, with other customers. And the biggest thing is we really didn't know what we didn't know. We didn't know what we needed. We didn't know the requirements because we were starting from scratch. I mean, we thought it was going to be pretty simple. You know, you pick a software and it's all got the same capabilities and we're good to go. The key thing is, I mean, I remember being at CCW and walking past you guys a couple times and laughing at the Swedish berries. As a freak laugh, because I was probably one of the toughest people to go, well, what on earth do you guys do?
We started throwing them at you at the end to get you to come by.
I think you did. And eventually you got me a Swedish berry and we started the conversations. But having a partner like yourselves, like CloudLynx, was key to us. Because Frank spent time with us walking through, hey, listen, here's the common things. Here's things to consider. Here's things you need to think through. And without that, I don't think it would have been as smooth of a process for us. Sure. It was, when I think through that, we probably should have spent more time benchmarking with customers. We did a little bit of that. But again, not really, like being green and not really understanding what to ask and what we were looking for. I'm sure now we could go through that and nail those questions down a little better and make that process smoother. But you also need to ensure you know your requirements and focus on the little things. All the software companies have the same basics. Mm-hmm. Right, they can all do basic workforce management, call, IVR, flow, skilling. It's the little things that make a big difference in who sure. you're providing and whether they're the right partner for you.
Yeah, no, everyone great. Has that first level of, it can do X, but can it respond with Y and Z? And can it respond how I want, when I report, report back on? Those are the nuances that... And you were skipping almost two generations of technology. I mean, you guys were making a pretty big shift into it. So it was a lot of things to consider. And what I found really impressive was that you were kind of the person that put your hand up and was like, I got this project. I got it covered. Watch me run. I'll build this thing. And I remember you just coming into meetings and being like, okay, now we got to do this. And you'd have a whole outline of what you wanted to accomplish. And the team would sit there and go, okay, let's fit that into the process. Let's see if we can make it work. And we'll figure out a way to do it. But it was always with a very clear vision of, I thought, maybe now looking back, you were just really good at hiding it, but you had I always thought you had a very clear vision on where you wanted to get to at the end.
Yeah, definitely did have a clear vision on where I wanted to get to at the end. Still do. It modifies slightly as I learn more. But I don't think deep down I was as confident as I might have sounded in the boardroom.
Sure.
Just because I just wasn't sure. And we were taking a leap in software that we really didn't understand our requirements. And even today, we've made changes to what we thought we needed in software to what we do need, or we discovered elements that we need in software that we didn't know up front. But really. The CloudLynx team helped us get to where we are, and without that, I don't think we'd be where we are today.
Well, thank you. That's good. Thank you. That's great to hear. Yeah, it's an interesting industry. Cloud-based call center software, or contact center as a service, as it's called, CCaaS, is all, regardless of whose platform you're looking at, is all new technology. You know, there are really not any of the bellwether established telcos that we've gotten used to in our careers, where Verizon and AT&T and then a handful of others. This is all completely new science. And in our experience, you've kind of fell into, I would say, easily 80% of the people who we meet with, which are people who run call centers well, tend to be very hands-on, capable people who are not afraid of taking on different challenges. Sometimes they don't even know fully, but they've got the gumption to say, yes, I'll take that. I'll run with it. It attracts a certain personality, which you clearly have. But with this new world of CCaaS platforms, there are, not to regurgitate this, but there's so many nuances and so many things that people don't know. That's all we do, is we try to help people understand what they don't know, and so that they can make an informed decision. And we're glad it worked out as well as it did for you, because as Frank said, you were jumping from mid 20th century right into 2019.
Both feet first.
How did you kind of brace the company for this transition? You know, how did you
bring, managing up and down and around?
It was managing up, managing down and around. So we started in 18, which is, I think, when I first met you guys at CCW. But we started a little sooner than that. So we are a publicly traded company. So we had spent a whole bunch of time kind of on the back end, just understanding a bit of the strategy and where we want to go, both with our board of directors, our CEO, and the C-suite, and really getting them kind of on board on the conceptual of what we want to do. Because again, we were fundamentally changing what we do. We were disrupting a little bit on our model of how we operate. We spent a lot of time before making the decision and moving forward, because it was 20, I believe, 19, before we did the software selection, before we started to implement. We had a lot of sessions with leaders of the organization, a lot of communication to the employees, and trying to bring them along on what we're doing and why we're doing it. Those were sometimes formal communications to what we called fireside chats, where employees could get on a call and just listen to what we're trying to do and why we do it, and ask questions, and be great questions from, are you shutting my branch down? Will I have a job? To, how's this going to impact my customer? It's taken a long time to turn the dial at all levels, because again, very traditional organization, traditional ways of going, and we've had to spend a lot of time communicating, re-communicating, reinforcing what we're doing, and then from there it was proving our words, walking the talk. And as we piloted, we actually slowed down our roadmap and our path to implement, just to make sure the organization was there with us, that they understood this software and the technology, that in fact, people were not losing their jobs. We weren't closing down facilities, and that we were there as that safety net, or as that technical support for both the customers and sure. And the branch staff.
It's amazing the fear that comes in for people when they hear you doing something like this, because everyone pictures kind of the late 90s, early 2000s, you're going to get a call sign, you're going to move it to some other country and I'm out, you know, it's like that, what Dell did, you know, but I think people need to be kind of treated like human beings. And I think you guys did a great job. You did a lot of prep work there to get people comfortable with what you were doing, why you were doing it, how you were doing it. And it gave you a chance to align everybody at the top bottom. I mean, I know there was friction, and you're probably glossing over some of that friction because it's legitimate, but people get, if you treat them well and you communicate to them effectively, which sounds like you did, they're more willing to take part in it, and you get a better result on the back end.
Yeah, exactly true. It's not, yes, I'm probably glossing over some of the friction that's happened, or the resistance, and it's ongoing. We still have employees in the organization that are still skeptical. Sure. And then we have folks that are all on board saying, take me there. I'm ready. And I think the turning point for us, I would say, was actually over the last year during COVID, when we had markets or certain regions that typically are our most resistors to change, calling us saying, you need to get me up and supported because I'm not sure what our government's going to do. I don't know if we're going to be shut down or if we end up with a positive case and I don't have employees in my branch, help. And the minute we started getting those calls, we knew we had turned the dial and started heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a lot of work. And sometimes it's painful. Sometimes you feel like, I'll use the term Groundhog Day every day. You come in and you're having the same conversations. You're having it multiple times. You're tackling it from different angles. Because Kevin is worried about is very different than what Frank's worried about. So there's a lot of hand-holding, a lot of one-on-one conversations to get to where we are.
Yeah. Would you have done anything differently up front? I know you said you made some tweaks and you're constantly reevaluating, but was there anything you would have looked at and was like, wow, that's a blaring. I should have done something very different.
You know, the differently would go back to not trying to disrupt the customer as much, and we didn't think we were disrupting the customer with making a change to what they hear, but it was more of an impact than we recognized. So I think less change to the customer, continue the disruption underneath, but less disruption to the customer up front, and some better communication. I mean, we thought wrongly so that putting this in was seamless to the customer and that they wouldn't see anything, wouldn't experience anything, and that we didn't need to tell them we were making these changes. Well, it doesn't happen when now they're at looking for Joe and they're getting Sally in a different province with a different accent or slang or not knowing the market. And, you know, we should have done better communication up front. And as we continue to roll out, that's one of the things we're adjusting for right up front. Customers are informed. They know what's happening. And the minute you walk the customer through the idea that, you know, when Joe's busy, you're going to get somebody that's trained like Joe, unless you select to get immediate assistance, which then could be anybody. You're going to be dealing with somebody that's just as knowledgeable. And at that stage, they all go, oh, great. So now I have two Joes. I'm like, yeah, you do. So that upfront transparency probably would have been a little better to the customers. And just not assuming there was no impact to that group.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Little changes make big impacts to people.
So that was a foreshadowing of what has become a very big thing in the call center industry now, Donna, in what's known as either regional routing or dialect-based routing. And yours was obviously Canada has such, you know, much like the United States, such distinct different regions of the country. Verizon is doing this now here in the States where their customer service support people are working from home. They'll route me to somebody who is based on Long Island because when I'm talking to someone else on Long Island, I feel like I'm talking to someone I can relate to better, or I have, you know, I have a lot more patience on my side, certainly, and likewise. So now CCAS providers are coming up with ways that they can help not just route within your network, but within their network so they can get you to someone who sounds like you. Which is, you know, one more great thing about cloud-based contact center as a service. But you were at the forefront of that back in 2018. I remember you talking to us about that.
And we do a little bit of that.
Yeah.
We definitely do it from the French versus English. But even within the English, we do route based on province and region as the first stop. But we don't stop it there because our mandate or our objective is to make sure that every customer gets a live wage X employee and they do so within 3 to 5 rings, which is 12 to 20 seconds. So in order to do that, if your local Let's say it's a call out in Alberta and your Alberta or your West support center is not available, it will come back to Central. But we even had those challenges within Ontario. So a Southern Ontario who's more of a farm town type customer, agricultural, didn't want to deal with somebody from the big city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why am I dealing with somebody in Mississauga? So the more we do adjust our routing based on call those preferences, and we won't send especially like a Western customer to a Quebec bilingual resource because they don't want to deal with cross provinces. But if we absolutely have to we will do so, just to make sure that customer is supported.
Well, that's great. And looking at the CCAS provider, not just the one that you're working with now, but on the whole, is there anything you see in the industry that you wish was up and running or different, or what acclimation do you think that you wish that we've gotten to at this point? Now I'm touting all the things that it can do, but what can't they do that they should from your perspective?
That's a really good question. the partners very much focus in and understand why they do so, but on the traditional contact center environment. So your telecoms, your banks, your call center, contact center, traditional side. I really think they should be starting to look at that non-traditional support centers. So support centers like us, we found as we go along that there are requirements that we're asking for that they say, but no contact center does that. Why would you consider that? And we said, but we're not a traditional contact center. We're a technical support center and our model's a little differently. So I think they should really, there's a big opportunity for them to expand outside the traditional contact centers. Every company, every large company could have a support model like we're doing and see the benefits of it.
Sure.
I think, and this probably varies by provider, but more input from the customers on what are the enhancements and really encouraging that input through their customer customer input groups. What are they called?
Like a folk user groups.
Yeah.
User groups, advisory boards.
Advisory boards. Really making sure that they expand those groups and seek that input from their customers more so than kind of driving what they believe are what's needed in the industry and needed by their customers from an enhancement standpoint. Really improved integration with other telecom solutions. I know that they really would love to have their solution in across the board, but it doesn't always make sense. And it's key that they can integrate with the other telecom, the traditional mm-hmm. telecom companies. So those are the main things. I think if we went through the selection process again, 2 years in, possibly could be the same provider, possibly not, because the company that's going to innovate best and the ones that stay ahead of the trends and really think about what's next and really an adaptable, flexible solution, I think is going to be the winner or the leader as it comes to the contact software side.
I think that's a great point.
Yeah.
It's a great point. I mean, like the innovation scale, you know, it's like, you know, which animal survived? Not the strongest or the fastest, the ones that can adapt fastest, right? They're the ones that survive. I think that's that you take that philosophy to the contact center. You're saying, you know, there needs to be a faster in a innovation cycle so they can do things without, you know, managing it to a committee. Like, let's just get this thing done.
Right.
We need it. Like, let's innovate. That's a great theory.
And for all the contact center as a service platforms out there who are watching, that statement by Donna is probably more impactful than anything you'd see from a Wall Street analyst on CNBC. That's coming right from the heart of the customer, so to speak.
It's hugely valuable. That's it. You got to be able to evolve. Otherwise, you're not gonna be able to keep ahead of the curve.
Yeah, and really differentiate. Like they should be pulling us along, not us pushing them along the journey. The partners we want to be with are those that are going to keep us on our toes and help drive the innovation and drive that change for our customers.
Yeah, no, I to me, that's the George Costanza moment, walk out on a high note. Like, that's it. Like, that's a great point, because I think that shows where you need them to be. That shows that they're partnering with you to show you technologies and show you things that you should be using, and not just, hey, we've rebuilt a chat engine, or hey, we can proactively call a client. And no, it's these are things that you may not have thought of, and that's actually, candidly, it's one of the reasons why we don't specialize in any vertical. So when we spoke with you in kind of the manufacturing distribution space, we do a union, we do a hospital, we do a retail organization. There's things that each of them are doing that are different, and it allows you to pull from an innovation cycle faster, because, oh, that's what they're doing over there. That may work really cool. That's something that you may not have thought of because no other distributor does that.
Yes.
Right.
That's what we view as our role in this, in any customer's journey. Obviously, our role is to be the customer advocate to the provider, mm-hmm. and pre-sale and post-sale. But then following that post-sale, what we're trying to do, and what we've certainly made our best attempt with the CX Experience podcast, is to help share what we're seeing and help cross-pollinate this ecosystem with other partners who we see doing things innovatively and just getting all this knowledge out, because those tools are coming and they are being developed, and sometimes they're by very small companies who are moving up the stack very quickly. Listen, Donna, this has been incredibly insightful and we appreciate it. I still think the best piece of knowledge that we've garnered from this is, if you're ever traveling through Toronto with a colleague, make sure you both state the same reason for your visit and avoid ugly customs and inspection agents in Toronto.
I'll never good forget the look
she
on that
knows who she is.
Yeah.
I hope 11 she's watching. O'clock at
night. So tell me what the cloud is and where's your business card? I can't even take you seriously right now. But listen, Donna, this has been great. Is there anything else you can think of, Donna, that you think would really benefit someone as they move forward, or no?
No, and not because this is your podcast, but I think Kevin, you were talking about kind of your role in this process, and I think there's a piece that leveraging a company like yours benefits the customers, and it's when you're going through the sales cycle, as much as every software company says that sales rep's there to the end, and they're going to see you through pre and post sale, it doesn't happen. We went through that, and I think I've seen you guys since.
Sure.
But
and we're still in the same contract.
Yeah, you're still there from pre and post, and it definitely has been very helpful to have that common that same group of folks there to support you that understand your business.
Sure.
And I think it's very important that anybody going through this journey considers, because you've got a partner and an advocate for you and somebody that helps you with software providers.
Well, thank you very much, Donna. That is exactly how we view ourselves, and we take that role very seriously. It's a pleasure working with clients like you and all of our other clients.
It really is.
Yeah, we're very lucky. So thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. I think I'll wrap us up now. I think everyone's, this is a fantastic conversation. I really loved it. Thank you very much. Donna, hang out for a second. I'll end this recording, but everybody, Thank you very much. I appreciate that's episode 6 of another season of the CX Experience. Thank you very much.
Season 2.
Season 2.
Here comes Mark Hamill with a lightsaber.
Thank you all.
2 Star Wars references, same podcast.